What's going on, guys? It's Chris Mead over at the DTCX Exceptional E-Commerce Podcast. This is your boy, Chris Mead, with My Biggest Lessons. And this week, I got a really talented, sick guest, Shrey Joshi, founder of Good Peeps. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, man? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on, dude. So I have admired you for a long ass time. I was interviewing for a performance marketer about 2 years ago, and we were looking to make one of our first hires. And I interviewed Shrey, and I didn't hire him because I didn't have enough money. And it was a huge regret. I wish I would have had enough money to hire Shrey, and CrossNet would have been in a much better position than it was today. But yeah, dude, I'm so happy you're on. Tell me first and foremost, obviously you have a great background for those who don't know Shrey. Former head of digital at Health Aid Kombucha. You cannot go in a store and not see the kombucha company. Cha Cha Matcha, which is like, I'm a matcha addict. And then Simulate, which is Nugs. Like, talk to me a little bit about your experience and why you've just started Good Peeps.
Yeah, so I mean, even before I was in CPG, I actually used to be an analytical biochemist working on like nutrition science and nutrition research. So when I was actually starting up my career, I thought that I wanted to be a psychology major because I just grew up like extremely overweight, which is like super rare for like being in San Diego. I was like the one like fat guy. And I like constantly was trying to figure out and understand like what was causing that. Like I had crazy brain fog. I was always tired, just like couldn't stay awake. And so I thought that psychology was going to be the thing that kind of helped me with that. But as I kind of got into university, I actually just started to like fall in love with kind of like granularities of like what biochem had to offer. I ended up joining a nutrition research lab, and during university ended up dropping about 120 pounds while I was there. Yeah. So it was like, I was studying on a day-to-day doing research with my university about what types of foods were causing inflammation in your organ systems and your body. I was then bringing all those learnings into my actual body, and I was just seeing like all these like crazy benefits. So I was like, okay, like I don't need to like be a doctor to be able to fix up my body. And like I don't necessarily need to go down this traditional medicine route. How can I bring some of these kind of products into everybody's daily lifestyle and just kind of like joined that kind of wellness category that was building in the early 2010s. So
I got to ask you before you even keep going, what were some of the things you're putting in your body that were causing the inflammation?
It really was just the processed foods, right? Like I think that you kind of grew up in like a, let's call it like a middle class, lower middle class household. And like you were just so focused on convenience foods because like that was just all the time that your parents had to like kind of make some quick food, make a quick dinner. And so what I was finding was just that like all of those kind of like super overly processed foods were just like destroying me. And so like as I kind of moved into like the more like plant-based kind of just like clean protein diet, like that just completely changed my ability to kind of think. But during that time, I was in undergrad, I like being a chemist, was just drinking an absurd amount of coffee, but then switched over to matcha because one of my nerdy friends was just like, hey, like this just, I'm way more clear. I'm not doing those huge like peaks and valleys of energy. And so he kind of got me on it and I was just hooked. And so I was like, holy shit, everyone needs to be drinking this. Like, how is this not like a common household product? And this is when I was in Boston at the time. So I just started applying to every single matcha company that I could and went down to New York City and interviewed with the team or the two founders at Cha Cha Matcha, and just we ended up kicking it off. And so that's what launched my career into CPG, was just like, hey, how do I get more people to drink matcha?
That's crazy.
So yeah, that's kind of the start to it. But then once I got to Cha Cha, really started to understand like all things brand, all things digital. Like I had like a really solid background when it came to actually being able to like translate the actual benefits behind the products and really giving that to a consumer where they can kind of understand and digest it. But Cha Cha really did an amazing job of really like, how do you build a brand and how do you tell a story that like people actually give a shit about? Like I can talk about the benefits.
I was hooked.
Yeah.
When I lived in Manhattan, man, I would literally walk probably half a mile to go to Cha Cha Matcha, like at least twice a week, and then go spend $9 for a matcha that was that small. Yeah. And I'm like, what am I doing? But I came back every week because it was the vibes. It was the culture. It was an escape from my reality.
Yeah, it's cool because Cha Cha was one of the first brands when like there was still an early kind of like digital presence where we were an amazing company that did a lot of really cool stuff, had an amazing experience, amazing social media. And we happened to sell matcha, and it was like the best matcha that you could ever have. And it was really made towards like the American palate, being a little bit sweeter, being a little less grassy. Like, people weren't coming in as a result of that. Like, the way that we were driving foot traffic was just like this beautiful brand, this beautiful experience that like you're in this like concrete jungle, and all of a sudden you're in this like beautiful
hipster's paradise. Yeah. Hipster's paradise for sure.
Yeah. But then like we got you to walk, like the idea was like we got you to walk in through the experience, but you'd keep coming back because you're like, this is like the best matcha I've ever had. And so that's been like a really strong structure to kind of how I've actually built other brands and products, is just like, number one, making sure that the product is the best that it can be. And you've seen that through companies like Nugs, where they were constantly iterating the product through consumer feedback to make it taste better and better for that audience. And then Health Aid, which is just like the best kombucha you can get in a bottle. And then delivering this like awesome experience that like then made you want to try, get that liquid to lips, as we would always call it.
Makes sense. How do you think about CPG in the world of, do you think you need to lose on a customer acquisition off the rip to get these customers? Like, do you think you should be spending that much money on marketing? Do you think these brands, I'm thinking if I was a bootstrapped CPG founder right now, right? Should I be trying to acquire customers profitably off the rip? What's your thoughts on that?
So I think it depends on the product category. Like, when you're looking at a high consumption product, an actual high consumption product, not the like, let's call it, I'm not going to even like try to go into the categories, but a product that has some sort of frequency built to it. Like, kombucha did an amazing job for that. It's your daily dose of probiotics. And so for us, we knew that the LTV was going to be way higher than the category industry average. And so we were able to go and acquire consumers profitably on first purchase or at break even. But we saw that the LTV was just silly. Like, we were at more than a couple $100s per cohort by month 6. And like, that's just like unheard of in the space. So like, I think it completely depends on like seeing what that actual consumer kind of frequency is for your product, is kind of how I would decide going about building D2C. But I think, especially for, let's call it like food and beverage products, there's so many under leveraged platforms to drive first initial trial that you don't necessarily need to spend all that money on typical Facebook IG acquisition into an 8-pack of like something that you've never tried before. Like, most people don't buy that way.
It's so tough, dude. I don't want to spend $30 playing Russian roulette. I won't even name drop the companies, but there's some seltzers I'm buying online. I get them and I'm just like, what the fuck did I just spend $30 on? And I'm throwing it out. Like, it's a terrible way to purchase.
It's also like this classic, you're late at night, you see this like crazy, like fast paced ad, you go to the website, you buy it, and like you immediately end up regretting that you bought it, but you don't want to go and reach out to the customer support team to go and like actually go about trying the product.
Cancel your order.
Right. And so it's like, rather than doing that, what we found for like a lot of other bootstrap businesses is that if you're driving first purchase or first trial, rather, through things like Instacart, things like GoPuff, some of those like last mile delivery sampling programs, maybe also like throwing in a free product with some of your other friends, D2C friends. Like, that's been an amazing, like profitable way of driving that trial. But I think that the question surrounding, should you go about acquiring customers on D2C or e-com profitably or negatively? It's such a loaded question, because like this is how I see it. CPG brands are built on retail distribution, but the thing that drives people to actually pull product off of shelf is your advertising. And so like, what we've always done a huge job of is showing the offline impact of what we're also generating and looking at the business as a total business P&L. Because say let's remove D2C as a total equation from a business and say that you were somebody that just wanted to launch retail. What would you do? You'd probably get as much store distribution as you can, launch a shit ton of reach and awareness campaigns, and like hope that the CPMs work in the city and hit as many possible eyeballs as you can. And cool, you're like kind of driving a funnel by having people seeing you before they walk into store. Whereas like the new way of kind of going about D2C digital retail marketing is like, you go about having Facebook and Instagram and all these other social platforms, find that audience that's most likely to buy your product based off of their total purchasing behaviors. Your CPMs cost way more, but the purchase intent behind those consumers are much higher. You go and you get them at a profitable or a break even on first purchase. But what you see is that the actual targeting that those social platforms did yields a much higher offline impact to the business because of the targeting structure. And so what we found was that like with brands that are, let's call it a little bit bigger, 20% saturation in market, for a specific city, every dollar that you're making on digital, you're actually generating like an additional $3 to $5 offline. And like those like more early startup at that 5 to 10% saturation, we're still seeing really good ROAS at like 1 to 3. And so it's like the question about like D2C acquisition is that business needs to be profitable over time. But like, how are you also then kind of chatting through the offline benefits that those kind of platforms have? Because like you don't treat your organic channels with the same scrutiny, but you see people like putting so much into organic. We totally understand the rationale behind wanting to have an amazing kind of community and brand there. But like then for some reason, paid advertising is like, what's your dollar ROAS on platform, which we know is shit.
This is why I love talking to you, right? Like that's how I got you on this podcast. I said, you're the nerdiest fuck I've ever met. And I love every second of it.
Yeah.
You just packed like 5 minutes of great info for a normal company, right? Half the words you say, thank God I know what they mean. But like 2 years ago, I had no idea what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're building a new D2C brand. You have money for two marketers. Mm-hmm. You can't do all that shit you just mentioned. Like there's just no way like one person could do all of that. How are you building a team right now? And like when you think of a marketing team, let's just say you came on my CrossNet team and we're let's say CrossNet selling food and bev, right? Because that's kind of your niche. What are you building internally and what are you outsourcing? And maybe that's a good time to also talk about the new agency you're starting.
All things content should always be internal. I think that every single founder that has kind of worked with other external teams for content marketing, like, will immediately kind of nod their head because of how frustrating that typically is. Like, what you found is that, like, yes, agencies understand the platforms the best, and they're like, hey, let's go and make content specific to each of those platforms, but they never understand the brand the best way. And so, like, the way that I've always kind of recommended people going about building their digital teams is having someone that just understands how organic social media works. And I'm not referring anymore to like Facebook IG, but just like somebody who watches enough TikToks and is young enough to like understand the platforms to go and want to make content for that brand. Those pieces of creative will be used across organic, end up being your best paid ad because they're the most UGC. They're the easiest to digest. You can use them across all of your email and SMS. And content by far is the point of distribution for your business now. So I think that always overinvest in that specific area. And the things that I'll always outsource are kind of more of those commoditized skill sets, like media buying. But now shifting your media buying, not necessarily to just like the random 22-year-old who just came out of college, but leaving media to those specialists, letting them do the thing in the account, but like just giving them a constant crazy amount of creative to go and like test and iterate on. Because we know all it takes is a couple of pieces of content to hit and you're off to the races. But it's that it's that first step that's like the thing that you need to really focus on.
100%. What would you say? So I know you went from Nugs, right, to Health Aid, and Health Aid, you were running like a 30-person team or something like that, you're telling me. Or is that correct?
We were a big group. Yeah. We had a large marketing team. Yeah.
What was kind of like the biggest takeaways you got there? Because I couldn't imagine being on a 30-person marketing team. And I'm sure most of the people listening to this are those small lean teams. What were the biggest lessons and the nerdy stuff that you learned there that you're taking to your next job?
When you get to scale, what you realize is that like giving people really clear swim lanes really lets an organization run faster. So like when you're thinking about like the typical, let's call it like company growth trajectory for the team business, you have a bunch of like really scrappy, smart, young people often doing every single thing that they possibly can to kind of force the business to a certain point. Let's call it like 10 to 30 mil. Like once you get to that 10 to 30 mil, you start to understand that like you need to really, let's call it, blow up a second way, that second S curve. What happens is like you're doing a lot of activities, you get here, you're kind of flatlining, maybe going a little bit down, and you need something really creative to bring you back up. And it requires an explosion in terms of the amount of output your team has. And so like on a bigger team, what you need to really do a good job of is like creating like clear swim lanes. Hey, you are the specialist for this, you are the specialist for this, you are the specialist for this. And then having those integrated marketing thinkers think about how do all these pieces of the puzzle actually fit together to like really execute these like awesome marketing activations. So I think a huge learning that like you can always kind of bring into any size of the business is that while startups often value output there is a huge amount of value that people continue to kind of bat their eyes at when it comes to really fucking awesome strategy. It injects so much more intentionality into how you're kind of building your business. And you find that a lot of the times those kind of up and coming brands like stopped, really thought about how this is kind of going to kind of enter market, like across all platforms and kind of launch. And so like you see companies like, and I'll shout out like the first one, like Vacation Inc., where you're like, this is so fucking well thought out. Like from the web experience to the post-purchase experience to me getting the product, it was like, they're moving fast and making a lot of noise, but they had those people in there and super obvious that really thought through what that total experience looked like from a very strategic perspective. So I think, that's a good learning.
That was exactly what I've learned this year was I hired so many people so quickly. We started, made a lot of money, right? Had a lot of cash in the bank account. And I said, hey, either I could take this myself, which I should have done, right? But take some cash out myself or hire a bigger team. And we hired a bigger team. And the thought process was, okay, I'm hiring people that are smart as shit. Let them go figure it out. And without setting that intentionality, we just had people that were sitting there, just had no idea what the hell they were supposed to do. It was, hey, let's try to figure it out. Let's try to make as much work for each other as possible. But without setting clear KPIs and directions, like the whole thing sucked. So like, I should have been much slower, much more intentional, set those clear lanes. And I bet our team would have our company would have grew so much faster.
Yeah. Like my biggest recommendation is move slow on strategy, move incredibly fast on executing against that. And you've seen that just work really well. And to kind of answer your question another time regarding like, what are some learnings that I'll take from this brand going into anything moving forward?
Give me them.
Actually have a brand. Like understand the difference between having a product that has good packaging and being a brand that has like a mission, vision, values that they're trying to kind of bring into the world. Not every single company needs to be a brand. Not every single brand needs to necessarily have a product. And so it's like, it's understanding who you are is like, I think a really important thing.
Do you think a brand needs to have a mission?
I think that for a brand to, I think for you to be able to call yourself a brand, that layer past it, like the beautiful packaging and design system, there needs to be something of depth. There needs to be something that you guys care about. There needs to be something that you guys want to celebrate, that you love, that you get excited by. And that necessarily doesn't need to be like, hey, we're going to go and plant a tree for every single dollar that we're making. There are companies that do that. But I think that there's this aspirational why that every brand should have. Like what's the purpose behind this guy?
Yeah, we've struggled with that, man, because we have a dope product. And now we've been trying to build I think we have a brand, but there's also the mission statement, that strong thing. I'm wearing the Mad Happy thing and everyone knows that they stand for mental health. Like for us, it's just go have a damn good time in the backyard and like
that's
getting outside. Yeah. Getting outside is more important than ever. That 20 minutes on the Peloton, that 20 minutes playing CrossNet at the park, that's the best time to step away and disconnect from the internet and all the shit you're dealing with. So yeah. It's been fun trying. I wonder how successful we would have been had we instilled that from the beginning rather than trying to web that in now later. Through our packaging, had we been more intentional from the jump, had we thought about those buzzwords and classic lingo, I think, it would have set us up for more success. You're right.
And your mission doesn't have to be crazy complicated. Like the mission for CrossNet can easily be like, we celebrate fun. We celebrate activities. And like, we're here to now build something that helps you go and do those things. So yeah, I would say definitely have a mission.
That's a good point. All right. Yeah. Last question I got for you, right?
Yeah.
You've been in the marketing roles. You've gone to the higher companies. Why the hell are you pivoting? Why are you making your own thing? Why is it time for Shrey to have his own company? Like so many people listening that are in the same situation, right? Like you're either working for a shithead boss that you know you're smarter than and you should be his boss, or you're sick of the bureaucracy. Like why is it time for you to make your own thing?
We're at this like really cool point in like CPG kind of like history where there are so many talented people kind of working against the same goals. And like the mission statement behind Good Peeps is like these three kind of things, which is like good people, good work, good time. And you find that like not everyone is necessarily like driven by those three targets. And like our goal is just like, hey, there's so many awesome founders, there's so many marketers, and then there's like all this noise in between. What if we were able to just remove all of that, just put like the best players that we can with the best brands that really want to do something and kind of change the world? and like see what comes out of it. And so like we've slowly been building that, and it's doing really well. Like we've really changed a lot of businesses in like in a pretty awesome way, like in the short time span that we've been able to launch. But it's just that. It's like you're seeing like this great resignation going on, and like you're seeing that like so many of these like really intelligent people are just like, I just want to be around more intelligent people and not necessarily need to deal with like the structure of the corporate world. I just want to do good work. Come join Good Peeps. Like that's exactly it. So that's why.
I love it. Well, congrats, dude. That's awesome. Thanks, it's hard growing a business, hard starting a business, but I'm so happy for you. I know you guys definitely have the tools and the skill set to be successful. So if you need some good work, Good Peeps, shameless plug, but dude, I know we'll be working together. So I'm excited. Hell thanks so much for coming on the show and taking your time.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. Let's talk soon.
Peace.
So that's another episode of My Biggest Lessons. Each and every week, I'll be having one of my favorite entrepreneurs come on, share their stories, their mistakes, the things they wish they knew. Entrepreneurship's a lonely road, right? You only learn by getting better. You only learn by making mistakes. So I want them to come on and share their stories. If you have somebody in mind that you want on, drop a comment, subscribe, share with a friend. Let's get the best people in the world on here. Thanks for listening.